to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole and search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on Earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m., Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Good morning, everyone. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and this is going to be a pre-recorded interview for October 18th, 2016. Wow, just breathe into the 2016 energies. We've got the most amazing wave that just hit us. Did it hit us like upside the head? Did it knock us flat on our back? Did it keep us breathless? Once you get on the other side of that wave, you are just kind of in bliss stage. I'm wondering if any of you are noticing that the chemtrails can only go up to a certain level within the sky because of the compression of divine and very high frequency energies that are compressing this planet. You'll notice that the chemtrails can only go up so far, and they are dissipating in certain areas around the world, either through the fact that they're running out of funding or they're running out of juice. Ha! Wouldn't that be awesome? The other thing we were just discussing a few minutes ago before we went live is this very interesting subject of the Mandela effect. And everybody is so perplexed by it. But what I want to remind everyone is just about everybody listening to this radio show has been doing some serious energy work, have we not? Even if you're not consciously aware of it, you're doing a lot of work in your dream state. You're doing a lot of work, which is really your reality state. And we are uncreating the mess, the distorted matrix that we so much want to uncreate. So as we continue that uncreating, and as it unfolds through the dimensions and the time sequence and reaches this dimensional realm, it's going to start making its, let's just say, mark by us not seeing certain things that we thought were there before. So this really isn't that big of a surprise. Just kind of want to point that out there. There have been quite a few of us talking about it this week. And remember, if you're if you're clearing stuff and you're purging and you're releasing, you're also uncreating. And in that uncreating, the main thing is we want to uncreate even the memory of it so that it never happens again. There's so many of us that have been called here today and in this new world age to make sure this never, ever, ever happens again. So I also want to remind everybody, we are busy, busy. We've got lots of IRPs, SA, DNAs. We do have phase four, which is the Guardian Protection Initiation. It's pretty awesome. It's stepping up your protective field from AI. So please check that out. We also have the realigning with Sophia. That's another new one. We're going to be bringing in a couple more, so stay tuned to that. And we also have a new healer coming on board who's going to do some of the heavy lifting. If you are a targeted individual, if you are contending with demonic possession type scenarios, if you're dealing with really, really heavy duty energetic intrusion, a lot of healers don't really want to dive into this realm. I just want to let everyone know we do have a new healer coming on board. I'll be making that announcement once it is all set, okay? But that's good news. Lastly, I'd like to put a call out to healers that would like to assist Galactic Connection with what we would call the Angel Healing Circle. What I mean by that is we'd like to get a group of people that are very skilled in their healing abilities that can remotely heal and assist some of these cases where they're absolutely desperate and don't have a penny to their name and who write in to us. We would really love your assistance. So feel free to drop us an email at admin@galacticconnection.com and we'd really appreciate your help. We don't need a ton. We just need a nice, small, solid, really committed and reliable group that are willing to do something for the planet and receiving back the knowledge and the wisdom and the fulfillment to know that you've changed another person's life. So with that said, well, I'm bringing on another new guy today who has not really hit the circuit yet, but knows he will. His name is Mark Jones. Mark Jones has been talking to me for a couple years now, and if I can't say anything else about Mark Jones, I can say that he is one persistent dude who knows exactly where he wants to go, excuse me, and he knows exactly what he has seen and experienced in his lifetime. I think this is going to be an interesting radio show from the standpoint that many of us are going to have a nostalgic experience just by reading his bio today. It really brought me back. And this is a guy who was born in 1956 and really grew up in the era of Star Trek, which how many of us out there are Star Trekkies? Come on, man, I'm like so into the Star Trek thing. As well as my favorite Martian, it was one of my favorite shows, believe it or not. I don't care how cornball. Twilight Zone, another one. And, you know, these are all the types of shows that really impacted the first waivers. All of us that grew up in the 50s, 60s, even 70s. And he actually has a very interesting background. He served in the U.S. Navy as steam plant engine supervisor and main propulsion and auxiliary maintenance, I guess, right? Overseer.
Maintenance and operation.
Okay. And handled large scale energy systems as well. He was also federally licensed as a nuclear plant reactor operator. Whoa. And Coast Guard approved instructor of steam plant operations. And basically, the main thing that's so interesting is an amateur astronomer. And from the time he was just a little kid, he's just been perplexed and mesmerized by the skies and the stars and the moon and the planets that surround us. Now, Mark has an interesting background. He was, his life started out pretty rough as a
as a you ended up in an adoption agency at a very early age. They even tried to get him out of that situation. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I think the main thing that's really in Mark's heart today is he has been receiving very, very specific guidance to discuss some core issues and topics about spirituality and its connection with Christianity. And I think this is viable because we've all come, many of us, I'm not going to say all of us, we have a lot of Muslim-influenced and Buddhist-influenced, Islam-influenced people that watch the radio shows. But Christianity is kind of one of the core ideologies of the Western world. And he has some really interesting perspectives. So with that, we're just going to go ahead and dive in. And Mark, just to give everybody a feel for how this whole thing started for you in 1956 and beyond, tell us a little bit about what happened in your first 5 years of life.
Well, that was...
Can you speak up? You're a little bit faint.
Oh, sure. Here, I'll just going to buck right up here. The first 5 years, you know, tremendous upheaval. You know, as what I've read, many starseeds suffer this. You know, whether they were trying to hide people, I almost think that's what it is that they weren't necessarily trying to make your lives difficult, but they wanted you to kind of be incognito, to be removed from your original setting so that you could be used at a later time. I almost think that's what it was. But there was, I was born first day of Leo on a Monday.
Surprise, surprise.
Exactly. So, with that, it ended up where I had these older sisters, and of course I didn't actually meet them until, it's been quite a few years ago now, 18, 19 years ago. But it was very interesting because, mom was kind of gone and dad was kind of gone. And so I had my sisters who were children themselves raising babies. And they were probably, 9, 10 years old, and here I am, a year old, and my brother, who was 2 years old, maybe a little older, almost two, I guess. And they were raising us. And what happened is that, we lived in the country, and there was a field out back, and the girls had seen that every year they would just burn that field off, to get rid of, the brush out there. And so they were to take it upon themselves to burn this field off. And they did that, and the fire got out of control. And then when the fire department showed up to put the fire out, they realized that it was children taking care of babies. And so it wasn't long after that that they, we got sent to the children's home. And they tried to keep us as a family unit. They really did. But the older sisters, they weren't having any part of staying in that children's home. So, they devised a plan, and they made a break for it, and they were, they were walking us down the railroad track, and
they actually broke you out of an adoption agency.
Yeah, they got us. I guess it was like an orphanage type
Amazing.
Of situation. Yeah, so the girls did that twice, and after the second time, they kind of disbanded us as a family unit. So because they were trying to keep us together, but after that, they said, we got to separate you two, and I recall some of that happened. I really do. And so, I even recall the railroad tracks and so I always walked railroad tracks my entire life. I walked railroad tracks, and it's so funny because, Piqua, the little town that I ultimately grew up in, it was connected, through the railroad, right here to Baltimore, because, you have the B&O Railroad, the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad, and that was the track that ran from my hometown to Baltimore, and here I am on the opposite end, here in Baltimore, from where I grew up, via a railroad track. So it's a very interesting situation. Then my father-in-law, who we take care of now, he worked for the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad for 40 years, so I have a lot in common with him before.
I thought it was just fascinating that you were a family. Your your older sisters took care of you. They even tried to break you out of the adoption,
yes,
you know, agency. And then, and that didn't work. And then you didn't see them for 40 years.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then we finally got back together, and it was a wonderful reunion of the hearts. I mean, we look alike, we think alike, we all have a little spark.
That's amazing. And so, you know, with that said, I know that one of the things that really kind of intrigued you throughout your life was the skies and the stars. And it says here that you've been, any extra money you had, I thought it was so cool. Does everybody remember the green stamps? Oh yeah. My God, when I saw that, the S&H green stamps, I can't, that was a long time ago. And you were talking about how you you saved up enough of them so that you could get enough bonuses to redeem your very first Bausch & Lomb handheld telescope.
Yes,
so
yes.
That led you to just kind of obsessing about the stars and
yes,
the skies.
Absolutely. Yes. I've always been a sky watcher. And of course, you know, where I grew up, it was just north of Dayton and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And so, you know, all kinds of stories were coming out of there. And though I never saw anything, you were always hearing about it.
Yeah.
And so it was just a stone's throw from, you know, from where I grew up.
That's wild. And now you've collected quite a few. Tell us what you have now.
Oh, I've got so many telescopes. You know, you got the little spotting scopes, you know. I've got one of those, and then I've got a 10-inch reflector. That was my first big scope that I got. I bought that, and after my adopted father passed away, he left me a sizable insurance policy, Yahoo. So I didn't really get any inheritance, but I got that insurance policy, you know. And so I actually bought my first big telescope with that. And since then, I've got an even larger one. It's a 14-inch Meade Cassegrain. It's a big one. It's a scientific scope, and you can see things.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So you mentioned that you've been really able to see a lot of the activity on the moon, and that you recorded dozens of crafts on and near the moon. This is what
yes,
you said. Intelligently designed structures. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Glass pyramids. Glass pyramids all over the place. And some of these are small, some of them are huge. You have to know what to look for. There's tremendous facilities. You know, they talk about the glass domes, and those glass domes are real. Some of them are still functional. Others, you know, they're in various states of repair. But the thing about it is that, you know, I read this book, and talked about the glass moon. And I understand that when you go to make glass in an environment within a vacuum and there's no water or no humidity, that glass is 10 times stronger than it would be if you made it here on Earth. And so being 10 times stronger, you know, it's stronger than steel. And that's why they used it up there. And I think David Wilcock actually said that it's an aluminum compound, that it's a transparent aluminum that they use. And so that is this type of glass.
Fascinating. And I would imagine they would need it to be even more heavy duty because of the weather patterns.
Yes, it's very robust. And, you know, this stuff can take a hit, you know,
yeah.
Once I really started looking at the moon closely, it became extremely clear to me that what they were calling craters and impact craters, they're not impact craters at all.
You know, what are they?
Well, they're dishes. Just, you know.
These are parabolically
formed, you know, devices that are built directly into the face of the moon. They're not impact craters at all.
I have never heard that before. That is fascinating. Yeah. That makes so much more sense.
It does. It does. And I've got pictures of an area called Mare Nectaris. And it would be just south of, you know, the famous Sea of Tranquility and those features. And when you look close, and I've got a phenomenal picture that shows this huge facility. I mean, this thing is, you know, I want to say it's 100 miles long.
Wow.
And it's got to be 20 miles tall. And there is a huge satellite dish built right into this thing. And you can see, I mean, you can see the geometry, you can see the symmetry. You can't deny it, you know. And it just so happened I caught a nice ship as it passed through that area one night on video.
Now, are you willing to share some of these videos and pictures with the world through?
Absolutely. I have a lot of them posted right on Facebook.
Absolutely. Cool. And yes. Tell us a little bit about, you know, as far as in your investigations with the moon, tell us a little bit more about your perspective about the dark side of the moon.
Well, it's actually the far side of the moon is what it is. And the far side of the moon, there's a lot of mystery associated with it. But, you know, I don't really look at the far side so much because there is so much going on the near side. You know, there is so much going on. I mean, I've caught discharges. You know, I was actually shooting with my 10-inch, and I've got them. I made a video. I got eight frames. It's either 8 or 10 frames, and it was over this one particular crater. It was a Maginus crater, which is very near Clavius. And Clavius is the one that it's a D-shaped crater, and then it's got this beautiful spiral pattern of sub craters, but when you look at it, you see that they're not sub craters at all. I mean, these things, they are devices, and there is machinery in these things, and you can see it. It's beautifully made. And anybody that looks at that, if they say this is a product of nature, I don't know what nature they're looking at.
They're crazy, right?
Yeah.
What about all the tunnels they've been talking about? Because I have seen some pictures of it. It looks like above ground.
Yeah, there's a whole system of tunnels and passageways that when you look at the moon, what you're really seeing is that when you look closely at it, you are seeing into the structure of the moon, because the first, I don't know how many miles it is, but the many, many miles of this is completely transparent. And that's why they call these areas up there Mars or Mares, because they're, which is Russian for ocean or sea.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can see into the water. Well, that's exactly why they call them that, because you can see into this and you can see the structures that are underneath of it. It is phenomenal when it finally dawns on you what you're looking at. And then you all of a sudden you see all of this gigantic structure up there. You know, it's phenomenal.
It legitimizes the whole concept that the moon is actually like a bell. It rings like a bell, right?
Yeah, the moon is actually, you know, it's not a planet, or it's not really a moon. This thing was created. It was made. It was constructed. Okay, and they say that the moon is actually, it came from a different universe.
That's what I've heard too.
Yes, and it is actually it's an emergency escape pod. At one point in time, that's what it was. I mean, the machinery up there is phenomenal. There's, you know, my background in engineering, on large-scale engineering, you know, nuclear power plants or ships or any of that stuff, you know, I mean, it's mega stuff. I mean, it's some of the largest pieces of equipment on Earth is what you're dealing with. And when you look at the moon, I've got pictures that show pieces of chain and rigging. And these things, you know, the chain is a quarter mile wide, it's 50 miles long, and then there's thousands of miles of cable that is attached to this.
Okay.
Mons Richti is the name of it. And NASA has pictures of it, and they call it a mountain. And when you look at it, it's a piece of machinery. It's rigging. It's absolutely rigging, you know, and when I looked at that, it's like, my God, somebody, I mean, I know what rigging is. I used to go four wheeling. We had 200 ton polar cranes at the plant, and, you know, here up in Baltimore, they had a 800 ton mobile crane that would go around lifting ships up.
Right. And
so, you know, I'm pretty familiar with that kind of thing. And when you look at this, you see exactly on these cranes what you see on the moon, and it's all the rigging. It's phenomenal. And when you look at it closely and you see that, all of a sudden your world just gets blown to pieces because the moon isn't what you thought it was.
So what do you think they're using the moon for? Who do you think is dominating the usage of the moon?
Well, there's a lot of theories about that, but there's a major ET presence on the moon. And
have you caught any pictures of extraterrestrials?
Yeah, I've gotten several pictures of craft, and I've got still pictures of craft, and these craft are huge. I mean, I've got one shot. The craft is 30 miles long.
And what shape are they?
Delta.
Okay.
Big deltas, yeah. On the north part of the moon, there is one that's parked, and it's a permanent feature. There's another, and it's got wings. It's a very beautiful looking vessel. I'll share that with you. When you see this, you know, I mean, it's right out of George Jetson, you know? I mean, it's right out of the Jetsons when you look at this thing. And there's other huge pieces of equipment that are laying right there beside it. You know, there's something that I call the ratchet paw. And the ratchet paw, you know, if you would ever open up a mechanical ratchet, and there's a paw in there that grabs this serrated wheel. Okay. And, you know, these on a ratchet, these things wear out after a while. Okay, and you have to replace these paws. And when you look at this thing, it is a giant ratchet paw that's 10 miles long. it's incredibly large. Yeah, we're dealing with, you know, life forms that are absolutely incredibly large. You know, it would be just like if you walk down the sidewalk and you would find the smallest ant that you've ever seen in your life, but you knew that was an ant. Well, that's you compared to who was actually on the moon and doing these things.
I remember David Wilcock talking about some disclosure of these so-called founders or elders.
Yes.
And how there was this gigantic structure on the dark side of the moon, and it was mind-blowing, and they were thinking that there's something like up to 80 feet tall.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's, you know, that were the, was it the founders, I think? They were the progenitors of creation.
Progenitors, yes.
Yes, yes. And they are also, they were very warlike, though. Well, I'm sorry, no, they weren't warlike. They were the ones that created all this, but then the Anunnaki came by who were warlike. And, you know, they caused the destruction of a lot of this. And, of course, you know, they say that the rings of Saturn, the outer belt of Saturn, is actually a debris field, but there's working technology in there.
I heard that there's glass.
Yes. It's the same thing as the moon.
So it's actually tying in with what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, I mean, that's what they do. Somehow, when you look at the moon, it is so funny because it's full of monuments everywhere.
That's the next thing I was going to ask you. What kind of monuments have you seen?
Oh, there's one that I call the Tower of Hercules. This thing's 100 miles tall.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right near what I call South Park, which is on the other side of Clavius, which is the really fancy crater form. Well, crater. It's a structure, the structure there. There is that. And you can actually see, you know, the Tower of Hercules, and then you can also see another thing there. It's an elephant. It's an elephant trunk, which ties back to the Hindu. And I can show you that. There is also a Sphinx type of device that is there. A very, very large. It looks just like a Sphinx. So all of these things are there. Whoever did this, you know, the moon in its original capacity was some type of a vessel, but now it's in a sad state of disrepair. I doubt whether the power systems work on it anymore. And so as things changed and they used it for these various other things, they sprayed this glass on things, and they would make cute little caricatures out of things. And there were faces, there were situations. There's a place on the moon, there's a book written about it called the Zoo Moon. And the Zoo Moon actually has all of these animal features, you know, and it looks like horses and dogs and other animals and people. And you can see it. It's very clear. And there's books written about this that, I mean, the books were written in the 60s. And so you can look at that and you can see that the what they discovered there, which is undeniable, is rampant on the face of the moon. There are all types, and there are females, there are males. You know, some of these people look happy, other people not so happy. You know, and so they left their mark. They left their mark from whatever civilization they were from, whatever they were doing there. They left a monument.
So what are the monuments made of, Mark? What does it look like to you?
To me, it looks like, see this glass product that they use, there's a clear glass and then there's also a black glass. And that black glass they use to shield things that they just don't want you to see it.
Ah.
So they mix the clear with the black in order to produce these various monuments that you see up there. It's fascinating. It is absolutely fascinating what you see up there.
So have you seen really large kind of like city amalgamations of yes. housing?
Yes. Southgate is full of that. When you look at Southgate, you know, where the Tower of Hercules is and these other large areas, when you look at these and when you start to recognize what you're looking at, it's when you first look at something, you don't know what you're looking at.
Right.
You don't know the architecture. You don't know the engineering behind it. You don't know anything. You just see something, you know. But, you know, if you've been trained in engineering and you understand the way things are put together, then it makes, all of a sudden, it becomes extremely apparent what you're looking at. The symmetry is there. The architecture is there. And when you start to identify the different components of what this thing is, and then you see that there's been something placed on top of it to hide it, and it ends up being a face of some sort. It ends up being, you know, some monumental structure of some sort. And you see that, and then you'll look around and see what I've always said is that the moon is a virtual junkyard. There is junk on that moon. I mean, the biggest junkyard on Earth can't compare it to what the moon is. This stuff is everywhere. You see, again, there's the Ratchet Paw. There are the crashed ships. There are large deltas that are there. There are things that look like they're conically shaped. They almost look like rocket boosters, but they're 20 and 30 miles long, you know, and they're all bent up. You can see it. It's been crashed, you know. So all of that stuff is there, and you just have to have the eyes to see it. And
what type of ships have you seen that have crashed?
Well, there's a very large delta up there, and it's a typical delta where, you know, it's kind of the rounded one, and it's got the hole in the center toward the rear, and I guess that's where some type of a power supply, you know, was there. So there's one of those up there, and you can see it. It's very, very clear, you know. And again, these conically shaped cylinders that are long, and they were probably ancient technology. They almost look like something. It's a larger version of what we would use with our chemical propellants. Mm. And that's what it almost looks like. So anyways, that's the moon is a junkyard. It's, you
that's
know.
Fascinating. Now, again, you said you focus more on the light side of the moon, but have you seen anything anomalous on the dark side of the moon that's maybe different than what you've seen on the light side of the moon?
Well, you know, I have really focused on just what I can see.
Okay.
I've not really looked too much at, I went to the JPL website, been many years ago now, and I downloaded every photo they had of everything. And they've got some interesting things there about the dark side, but the problem is what you get has already been revised so that you don't really see what's there. And so rather than looking at that, and I know a lot of folks, and God bless their work, that they have, you know, received, they have asked for and received these different photos that attempt to prove a point about, you know, while NASA's not telling us the truth, here's what's really there. I kind of take the opposite tact and say, look, I got a big telescope. I know how to use it, and I can get my own information. Mm-hmm. And I'll guarantee what I show you, NASA will never show you. It will never be disclosed. But when you see huge city gates that are just there, it's like when you see these large elephant-type monuments, And it's like, you can't deny that. And it's like, you're never going, NASA's never going to show you this. Now, in the next few years, as disclosure happens, you know, more and more will be leaked out. And I mean, look at it. You know, we've got huge telescopes on Earth. And how come they don't release pictures of the moon?
Exactly.
They could see a gnat's butt, you know?
Exactly. I know. My husband was just saying that to me the other day. It's really, it's humorous that we're looking at the crumbs that they give us.
Right.
And they're all phased out. Have you ever looked at a NASA photo and then possibly compared it to your photo?
Yes, I have.
And what is it in particular that you feel that they're trying to hide the most?
Well, they are very good. You know, when I bought my telescope, my big one, the first big one, my 10-inch, which, you know, it wasn't that expensive of a scope, really, and it was a very basic scope, but it was the most bang for the buck. And so I went to a telescope shop, and I went back, and of course, you know, the big deal about a telescope is getting the right lenses. You know, because that's what gives you your magnification. It's what gives you your field of range. It really makes the scope. So it's not so much about the telescope as it is about the lenses. So I go to this telescope shop. I get this, and I'm asking him about lenses. And he named this one particular kind of lens. And I said, well, what does that do for you? And he said, well, it flattens everything out. And I said, really? I said, why would you want to flatten it out? You don't flatten, and this is what NASA does. They take these photos, and then they take them through apertures that basically compress the features. And so it makes it look like it smashes everything down, so it looks completely two-dimensional. And so with the two-dimensional thing, you can't get your field. The lighting isn't correct. Everything is distorted. So you are trying to decipher. You've got a 3D body up there, and it's shot in 2D. It's flattened out, and we're supposed to make something out of that.
But do you think that's what NASA's using?
Yes, that's what they – and that's the type of photos that they give you. Now, I will tell you this, that there was – one file in particular that NASA had on the JPL website, and I forget the area that it was located, but it was a 450 megabyte TIFF file, okay?
Wow.
And this was one picture, 450 megabytes. And I said, man, there's got to be something in here. And so I downloaded that thing, and I blew it up, and I got incredible, you know, HD. And I could see the terraforming that had gone on. And there is actually this one area in this set of mountains there that when you zoom in on it, you actually see terraforming on a massive scale that depicts an Asian girl. It's an Asian girl. And it's very, very clear as to what it is. Her nose is actually a glass pyramid. You know, she's got like a peacoat type of thing on, double-breasted peacoat, and then there's a star right above it, you know. Well, it's a white light type of feature. And so, you know, I call it NASA's Star Child, you know, and that was probably the most phenomenal picture that I've ever gotten from NASA, because it's like, and, you know, and I was led to that. I was, get this, go here, and I saw it, and it was just, oh, my. I was dumbstruck.
So what do you feel is the purpose of that? I mean, is that like a sacred geometrical grid? Is it acting in that way as that image?
I don't know. I think it's more of just, it's another monument type of thing. Until we really understand more about, you know, why those monuments exist like that. Because, hey, let's face it, we have no human history that we know of. We can only go back 7,000 years, and then they try to start putting, well, where's the missing link, you know? It's silliness. It's silliness the way that we're approaching this. And then we go back to the Bible, you know, in the Bible. It's just like, well, you know, all of a sudden we just showed up. Well, you know, humanoids have been around for billions and billions of years.
Years, yes.
You know, now, Homo sapiens sapien, in this current form that we are, we've not been around that long, okay? Basically, since the last flood. That's what these floods are all about, is wiping the face of the earth so they can roll out the next species. And that's been true with Neanderthal and, you know, all of the other ones, you know, and that's just what it is.
Well, before we go down that road, just a couple more questions about the moon. When you're using your telescopes to review the actual topography, mm-hmm. what are you actually seeing?
Well, it is, in all honesty, it is difficult to really put a grand picture together on it, but I see the moon as a device, and it is full of engineering things. You can see massive wheels. You can see drive gears. You can see chains. You can see huge machinery up there. I mean, that's the thing that really blows you away, is the scale of it. You know, it's one third or one fourth the size of our planet. And it is an engineering miracle when you look at it, even in its state of disrepair.
Right.
You know, I mean, it is so difficult to really convince anyone just by speaking of it. Mm-hmm. But when you sit down and you start looking at really what you're seeing, you know, this isn't a bunch of rocks piled together, you know.
But you do see trees, right?
No.
Not at all?
No, there is very little of an atmosphere on there. And, you know, and as we know about most other planets and moons, habitation is really on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where it is. And it's set us for safety reasons, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, and everything that we see on the face, there's just sensors. All, you know, there's towers, there's satellite dishes, there's all kinds of apparatus to support communication. You know, and that's what you see there. And there's been.
So you're feeling that the majority of the people that live up there, they live inside the moon.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And there's accesses all over the place. You can see it, you know.
Really? That too, huh?
Oh yeah, plenty of accesses. You see it, you know.
I know that they've sent. We've blogged quite a few pictures of. I remember this one that was a chicken. There was another one where it was showing squirrels.
Yeah, that's the zoo moon. Yeah, that's the zoo moon. Yeah, it's all there. And then people, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they don't want to believe. They're presented the information, but they don't really want to believe what they're seeing. So, well, how could it be? Well, then all of a sudden it challenges everything they know or what they don't know. And then they've got to figure out, well, you know, well, it's just something that we don't know. And then they let that part slide and they don't try to go back and say, well, you know, this ties into humanity in some way. What is that link? How does this moon that is really older than the Earth, clearly it has tremendous mechanical things that are there, apparatus that are there, and clearly it has been used, you know, how does that tie to humanity? And as long as we ignore that type of things, then, you know, we're just a stick in the mud.
Well, that's a good segue into the next topic, which is you felt very, very strongly about making a connection with some of your Christian roots into more of your higher consciousness roots now.
Absolutely.
Talking a little bit about, you know, the soul and the spirit. And, you know, I'm willing to start wherever you want to go. I think the most important thing is to possibly dive into how long have you been familiar with the Bible? Did you read the Bible from front to back?
Well, you know, I have read parts of the Bible and really gotten into about what it says. But it's not about what it says, but about the context that the words are written in. And, you know, there are certain themes that run throughout it. And, you know, to me, the Bible is a reference book. You know, it's not the story of anything. It's you know, it is a control system. And if you know, you've got the Ten Commandments, you know, and if you break one of these rules, then you're a sinner. Meanwhile, there's a lot of other things that they don't cover in there that maybe they should have covered.
Or they did cover, but it was taken out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the Book of Enoch.
Right.
You know, that was really told about, you know, how we came to be in large part. So, yeah. And, you know.
How about all the female apostles?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And oh, see, that's right. The females don't have anything to say, right?
Right.
Because it was 2,000 years ago, supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah. Never mind the fact that there is something. Wait a minute. Divine feminine energy.
Yeah. Nothing about that.
No, nothing about that. And, you know, and it's, I've always said, and I never understood it growing up. It's like, well, how come there's no women in the church? That, why is this a male dominated institution? You know, predominantly. I mean, I think the Baptists and some of the others, they've, in recent years, they've kind of promoted the female aspect of it. But I mean, how come it took so long to even get to that point?
Yeah. You know,
where's the divine feminine in all this?
We should be asking these questions. I think what's really happening with a lot of people that have grown up in religion, I think most of us have, actually, there's quite a few of us that have reached the place where we are now,
right,
is we are really getting to a place where your own conscience mm-hmm. can no longer live with explaining an answer
right.
to a question when it was someone else's truth.
Right, exactly.
That's what's going on right now, is we're really getting lit up to start stepping into our own mastery. What does yes. it mean to be a master, right?
Exactly.
So talk a little bit with me about the Christian ideology that you started getting, you know. By the way, folks, he's gotten quite a few messages that he is supposed to come forward and talk about this.
Yes.
So strongly that he was like, we got to do this. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about something that all of us are so familiar with, which is, I don't care what religion of the 12 core religions on the planet, they all have a central theme of we as a sinner.
Yes. Yeah, and that's was built in by the Anunnaki. You know, they wanted to ensure that humanity had a control system that was self-regulating. And as soon as you call somebody a sinner and that you're not worthy, you are not worthy, and you were born into sin, and that's just the way it is, and you're really going to have to work hard to get out of this mess that you're born into. So immediately, you know, you've got a ton of stuff laying on top of you that you've got to dig yourself out of.
Right.
Well, you know, you tell me how that is unconditional love.
Well, and on top of that, how do we define what sin is? Now, I've had this conversation many times with friends of mine as well. You know, one of the so-called sins, in my opinion, is the fall.
Yes.
Being born or actually incarnating into, we keep referring to it as the Matrix.
Right.
Right?
Yes, yes.
And I would say the other thing is maybe the veiled consciousness, just, you know, the veiling of our gifts. Mm-hmm. That could be another explanation. So what do you feel it means?
Sin is nothing more than a frequency. And it's a frequency that is not conducive for ascension. So anything that you do that is of a lower energy, essentially, it is sinful. It provides an attachment or a hook to keep you firmly in the 3D. That's what sin is. And I don't care how you qualify it.
Right.
So sin is nothing more than a low frequency that keeps an attachment to the 3D, and you'll never escape it. That's what sin is.
So what about those that are out there, Christian-based theologies, who they don't feel necessarily that they're sinning, but most of them will say, well, I'm a sinner.
Right.
What would you say to them?
Well, anyone who believes, you know, that they're a sinner, they don't love themselves. You know, they're not expressing unconditional love to themselves or anyone else, because I'm not going to say that you're a sinner, you know, because I love you. And I've never met you in person, but I can honestly say that I love you because that's who we are.
Yes.
We are love, and that's all there is to it. And right. I talk to folks, and I got this one neighbor right across the street from me, and he comes over, and we talk about, you know, theological things. And I tell him that I love him, and it shocks him. It absolutely shocks him for me to tell him. And I mean it. When I say that I love you, I mean that. It is unconditional love, which means I'm not going to judge you. Okay, I'm going to accept you the way that you are, and I'm not going to judge you, which means, now how can I call you a sinner and say that I give you unconditional love? The two don't match up at all.
Right.
So if you know, this is nothing more than a control system when it comes to those that want to insist that you're born into sin.
Well, and I think another part that you and I talked about off air was the fact that sin is also possibly interpreted as the karmic load, the debt load, that our ancestors or even ourselves in other timelines have accumulated.
Yes.
And one of the greatest things about this end of the world age, as we've all been talking about, is that this is a time to purge and truly release all of that debt load.
Okay? That is correct.
And we don't have to do it just individually. We can do it for the entire human race.
Yes, yes. And that's where we're at. And that's where one of these fundamental belief systems that, and I know this is going to shock a lot of people, but I have a very close relationship with Jesus. Okay? Very close. Always have. And so, and I mean, he's told me, you know, that this whole thing, he was never here as a savior. Oh God, did I say that? That's not why he was here, nor did he come to create a whole new religion. Nothing about that.
Yes.
You know, he was here to demonstrate how to live an honorable life and how to love unconditionally, and to show that we are healers. Every one of us is healers. Those things are nothing about sin. They are about unconditional love and telling you the truth of who you are. That's what it's all about. It's all about that aspect of it. And so your go back to your original question there. I think I kind of got off track there a little bit. But so when it comes right down to it, you know, we are here at this point in time to, as you know, we are getting rid of all past karmic debt. And that is the dispensation that is discussed.
Yes.
You know, that dispensation, as Jesus, he really didn't say anything about that. But, you know, when you look at the way our religious institutions are here in the Western world, you know, it is all about that Jesus died for your sins, you know, and that through his death that you will have everlasting life. Well, excuse me here just a little bit, but he was murdered first off. He was publicly tortured and murdered. He was hung on a cross. Now, what does that say? If you're a rebel, we will string you up. We will publicly torture you and we will kill you. That's why throughout the cosmos, throughout the universe, this little orb is known as the planet of the cross because of what they did to him. He didn't die for us.
You know, interesting, you brought up a couple points. The first one I would ask you is your perception of the difference between Jesus versus Yeshua. That would be my first question. And the second one is all about the cross. And I will always remind people that if you take the cross, it is, I think, four parts this way and six parts this way. Mm-hmm. And if you take the tail end of the cross and you roll it up, it's a box.
Okay.
And it's a box that relates directly to Saturn, which is basically keeping us in a box, keeping us restricted, and preventing us from really getting who we are. A lot of us have been taught that we are children of God.
Yes.
We've also been taught that we're in the image of God.
Energetically. Yes.
So how is it that we are such sinning, vile, disgusting creatures? One of the things that we're here today to do is to reclaim our original human angelic blueprint.
Yes.
Regrow our wings.
Yes.
And take back all of the phenomenal gifts.
Yes.
That every extraterrestrial out there finds fascinating, I might add. It's why the DNA of the human body is so desired.
Right. Yes.
So, but what is your feeling about Yeshua versus Jesus?
Well, you know, there has been so much written and so much discussed, you know, about the subject of who is who in all this. And I have heard so many different stories that Archangel Michael is actually Jesus, who was, you know, supposedly a fallen angel, and others say, no, Michael just took the job. It was his deal, but somehow he's closely related to Jesus. And so there are archetypes. Mm-hmm. There are archetypes. And so I see that as that there's an archetypal family out there that many of us have that DNA. We are part of that family, and there's no denying it, because that's who your guides are. That's your family.
Yeah.
And they try to steer you to what, you know, the plan was before you came here, even though you don't remember it. They're trying their best to steer you. And so you say, well, you know, who is Yeshua? Well, okay, many say that's God. Who's God?
Yeah.
Who's God?
Find that.
Yeah, who is God? Because, you know, what Jesus said is that you will find the kingdom right here. It's within you.
Yeah.
It's your DNA. That's who God is, because you have the God particle. That is that spark which releases the Kundalini, which energizes all your chakras, which gives you your ability to connect directly with the higher realms.
Yeah, and back to one of the other comments you made, which is you were talking about Jesus being murdered. Ralph Ellis, are you familiar with him?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Ralph, I owe you a phone call, and I'm so sorry because I never got back to you. But Ralph has done an immense amount of work on that time frame. And one of the things he talks about is the fact that the Jesus of that time period that so many esteem and put on the cross.
Yes.
He provides an amazing amount of connecting points that he was a rebel. He was somebody who was very much into refusing to pay his taxes. And he absolutely got so pretty much, you know, ballistic about it that he threw a tax riot.
Right.
And according to his research, after looking at copious numbers of documents, including the Bible,
mm-hmm.
He was able to find out that basically one of the main reasons that they hunted him down and they set up this whole strategy to lure him in was because he was a tax evader.
Oh, yeah. Okay, then.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. It is.
That's his bit that he's researched. So it just really enlarges the whole thing. The other thing I was going to say about the cross is I've been told by an individual that the cross actually shatters the soul. It actually fragments the soul.
Yeah, I can believe.
So if he died on the cross and Jesus represents God's consciousness or the Christ consciousness, isn't that an interesting twist of wording?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I can believe Jesus, absolutely a rebel. Anti-government. I mean, look, he threw them out of the temple because they were trying to sell trinkets, you know, so that they could pay, you know, because I mean, this wasn't anything about spirit. This was about getting into your pocket and getting you in the habit of paying for something that you don't need to pay for. And that's what it's always been. And so, you know, as all a part of the Babylonian debt slavery system that we're all well versed in, we are all part of that system. And I can't wait for the day when we don't have to charge anything for anything. That, you know, we exchange ideas. There is no need for money, because the only place there's a need for money is right here on Earth.
Yes.
That's the only place. We don't need it any other place. And so, you know, I'm all about no money. I'm all about no taxes. You know, I've gone after the government several times, you know, about circumstances like this, where they have tried to, you know, allow other people to abscond property that was belonged to the community. You know, I actually went to jail for that.
You did? Yeah, I read that really flipped a switch within you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and we went up to the courthouse and looked through all of the property records to find out, you know, the original deeds and how this thing was set up. And, you know, these people were just, and, for 100 years, this property had been maintained for the public so that we could access, it was waterfront. But these were small pieces. These were small pieces of water, but there are small pieces of land that connected to the water. You know, they were only 30 feet wide, but you could put your boat in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could go down, you could play in the water. You could take your dog for a walk and play fetch in the water. You know, it was a wonderful thing. And the next thing you know, these people are, you know, well, they got a job with the government, okay, with zoning. And next thing you know, they're putting plans in to, you know, to get this piece of getting regulation changed so that they could steal this property, rewrite the surveys and say, it's mine now. And what are you going to do about it?
So how'd you end up in jail?
Oh, well, because the guy put this no trespassing sign out, you know, on this piece of property that was, no, this is not yours to say that there's no trespassing. So I ripped the sign off and I threw it in his yard. And I was heading into town to get something. And then when I come back, and I knew it. I said, well, the state cop's going to be there and, you know, let's just see what he does. So I get there and sure enough, you know, I said, well, you were trespassing. You're going to have me arrested. I said, okay, let's do it. threw me in the cuffs, threw me in the car and took me to jail, you know? And of course the whole thing got thrown out. It's no big deal, but it's just that I wasn't going to stand by and let these people steal something. And it was all for them. And it was something that had been part of the community for over 100 years. And now they're going to come along and they're just going to steal it. And the government is in cahoots with them. They're supporting it. You know, why? Because, well, they're just going to rewrite the taxes so that these people will pay more money, because when it was a right-of-way, they couldn't get any tax money out of it.
Right, right.
You know, but as soon as somebody...
they couldn't control it.
Right, they couldn't control it.
That's pretty cool that you have that little fiery spark within you. Now, back to the sin. Let's talk about service to self and service to others. How does this all fit in?
Yeah. Wait, you know, and I'll be honest, I actually got this number from David Wilcock, but it makes perfect sense to me. And he's not the only one who said this, but he was the most recent person that I heard say it. But yeah, service to self and service to others. You know, in order to set yourself up for a wonderful opportunity for ascension, you need to serve others by at least 51% of your total output. Now, when you think about it, that's not really much. And as I had said the other day that, you know, every test I've ever had, if, you know, man, if you only had to get a 51 on it to pass, that was a gimme. I could guess and get a 51%. So chances are you're going to want to make sure that you get more than 51%. But yeah, 51% of your time and effort should go toward service of others. And if you don't, well, that just means you're self-centered. That just means you're ego-driven. And that means that you're probably going to have to keep living this 3D life until you come to the conclusion that we need to be loving and compassionate toward others, and we need to serve others, not ourselves.
So let me throw something out at you. If I'm serving myself and we are all in unity, am I not serving you?
But are we in unity?
That's a good point. I was hoping that you would respond, because we talk so much about unity consciousness.
Yes.
We talk so much about how we are all one. But in truth, we are not all one yet.
That is correct. That is correct.
We are all of the same God particle. We are all of the same essence of life.
Yes. 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 See,
but unity consciousness is also a frequency.
Right.
And, you know, Joe Schmo down the street that's, you know, smoking crack and beating his wife and, you know, keeping his dog out in 20 below degree weather. Mm-hmm. His frequency is far, far lower than, say, mine. I'm not going to have much of a unity consciousness with him. I'm going to acknowledge that he's part of the tapestry.
Right.
Have kind of a misunderstanding about unity consciousness.
Yes. We can't be a part of unity consciousness until our frequency reaches a threshold value, which means that, you know, our guides and guardians, they can look at us and they know what our frequency is just by looking at us.
Sure.
They can see our auric field and they know where we are with things.
Right.
And so when we reach that threshold value, then, you know, automatically we connect to unity. And so then it becomes that what you think manifests extremely rapidly.
Yes.
And so, and we are there. Many of us are there. We don't realize we are part of the unity consciousness grid. Then there are others that they are not part of the grid because their frequencies are just too low. And so, yeah. You know, and of course, that's one of the reasons why we're here, is to help people.
I was just going to say that. And it's one of the reasons we're here also, is that, you know, I read this a long time ago. It's resonated to the core of my being that the other reason that there's so many different types of races involved in this, why there are so many other extraterrestrial races that are supporting us in this, and mm-hmm. that is because they all played a karmic part in sending off to this planet,
yes.
their lower frequency, I'm going to say beings,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
they shipped them off to planet Earth.
Right.
And everybody ended up paying for that.
Yes.
Because that just is a perfect example of the frequency getting so low that it also impacted Mother Earth herself. That's
right.
Another way to look at it, folks. It's just another lens to see. As you know, I like to look at things in all different perspectives,
yes.
which is another reason I'm talking to Mark today. Now, Mark, let's get back to the 51%. One of the things that I learned from Torrey Smith is he would review people and literally had like a hologram screen in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. He would describe everything he saw. It was almost like a cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be able to just look at you and go, oh, yeah, that's 68% of the light.
Right.
And I said to him one day, well, what's the highest percentage you've ever run into? He says, oh, no more than 92, 93%.
That's high.
I said, wow. I said, so what's the cutoff point? He said, 51%.
Right.
And I said, well, what happens below 51%? He says, well, it's been very interesting. He's been noticing patterns. And when he would scan the reptilians or the governmental agencies or the governmental officials or the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds or the aristocracy from England or things like that, they almost always were below this infamous number of 37%. And some of them were as low as 17%.
Mm.
Okay. So if you, and there's many people, this is what blew me away. There's many people in the spiritual community that I would run by him and they would be at 37%. I said, well, what does that mean? And he said, that means that they've either been in the vicinity or there are aspects of themselves that they're not necessarily consciously aware of.
Mm-hmm.
That have what we would say sold their soul to the devil,
right.
And they've been involved literally in satanic ritual.
Yes.
But they're not consciously aware of it, but other aspects of them, because, you know, folks, come on, we're a lot more than just this one physical.
Right. That's right. We're a fragment. We're just a fragment. Yep. Yes.
And I thought that was just fascinating. I'm like, oh, come on. People would just, you know, roll their eyes at you. He says, I'm just telling you this. I see it day in, day out. He goes, this is all I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the majority of the folks that have been ruling this matrix are 37, 27, and 17%.
Well, the sevens are good numbers, but as far as being less than 51%, they're not buying much.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. So, yeah.
They're anchoring. Think about it.
Right. Right.
Well, and I think the 51, the 1%, you know, to make it, as you say, more service to others.
Yes.
Just keeping the ego in check, because I do feel really strongly that in this reality, we do need an ego. It has kept us alive. It's
mm-hmm.
It's been an integral part of our survival here.
Mm-hmm.
And think how much we've learned by mastering our ego.
Yes.
If that's possible.
Well, yeah, it's, one of the wonderful things about being human is our range of emotion.
Yes.
And our range of emotion, it's the result of the interaction with our environment, but also ego plays a large part in that, you know, because we have a tendency to be pretty serious judges of almost everything. And I don't want to say judging is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we analyze, because we have to analyze circumstances to determine really what is in our best interest.
Right.
You know, but these days we don't want to do so much, you know, analyzing. We want to use heart.
Yes.
And that's where we go with this is
yeah.
that, you know, take the ego out of it for a second. Focus, literally, think about your high heart area and then think about that thing that you're trying to figure out. What does your heart tell you?
Yes.
That's where we are with this. And so, you know, using heart and making sure that you are service to others by, you know, at least that 1% margin. But again, you know, that is such a small value, 51%, you know. And if you never go outside of your house and all you do is watch TV shows that you like and read things that you like, and you don't do anything except for you. You eat the foods that you like. You don't prepare for anybody else. You don't do anything for anybody else. Well, you're not really a team player here. And the point here is that we all need to be team players in this. And we need to reach out more and more to do that.
So that leads me to my next concern. And that is, in specific religions, you are taught, I'm sure everybody can relate to this, when I was growing up, you are taught that you don't read anything outside of an approved list of books,
mm-hmm.
You, depending on what religion you were brought up in, let's just say you were a fundamentalist Christian, you're literally told you don't read anything else but the Bible.
Right.
You can read, you know, various stories or whatever, but they will flat out tell you, if you sit down with a pastor, they will say the only book on the planet that is of truth is the Bible.
Hmm.
What is your comment to that?
Well, you know, all religious texts, in my mind, they are a good lead-in for the time that we are living now, but there is not a shot that they can really reflect what is happening now and what is going on now. They were things to live by, to provide analogies, you know, to provide stories on how to live. But, you know, so they were fundamental things that we should be striving to live by. But again, they kind of missed the mark in a lot of different areas, you know, like with the Ten Commandments. You know, it's like there's other commandments they could have put in there, like don't beat your wife. You know,
yeah. Unconditional love. That's a good point. That's a good point. And also, what about the psychic visions, mm-hmm, that are embedded all over the place within the Bible that have not come true?
Right.
Or they're not coming true in the fashion that a lot of Christians believe they should come, you know, that they're going to come in truth. Mm-hmm. And what I'm always reminding people is, because we are creators, you are going to create what you believe. This is the reason Mark has contacted me today, is for all of you that are enlightened out there, that have people within your families who are kind of a little bit more resistant to stepping into the metaphysical box or stepping more into a fully mastered, hey, I'm going to branch out on my own and I'm going to be responsible for my own truth and my own ideals, etc. You know, it's far more difficult and challenging to be your own master.
And be your own creator, yes, because we are so used to having the world created around us, but it's always been someone else doing it. It's, yeah, a construction company that is doing it. It's your government that's doing it. But now we step into mastery that we are in fact the creators. And so that means that in a quantum universe that we live in, and when you are tied into unity consciousness, that whatever you think, it will start to manifest right in front of you. This is the reality of what quantum physics is about. And people are completely blown away by this idea. It's like, well, no, if you think about it, you act on it, then in the physical, you create your world.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about. We are talking about your thoughts will start immediately, because it is a thought energy. That thought energy is sent out to the universe and it comes back amplified. And it'll come back amplified in in your 3D reality. It may come in a vision. It may come in a dream. But it's going to come back to you, and it's going to tell you that, okay, we are acting on what you thought. Between my wife and I, we do this constantly, where I have this thought about what I really, really want. She gets a dream, and I'll journal about it. And then she gets a dream that backs up exactly what that passion was that I had just written out.
Mm-hmm.
And I show her, I said, come here, look at this. You know, you're telling me this dream, which coincides exactly with what I journaled about last night. Now, I journaled about it, and then she has the dream, and we compare, and they're a direct lock on one another, which means that, you know, we are creating as we go along. And most folks don't understand the interface of how the universe communicates with you, because why? We've lived under this veil. It's only the five senses that we're used to dealing with. And now we are stepping into our intuitive power. We're stepping into our third eye. We can see things. We are given visions and dreams constantly.
We're being given hunches, intuitions.
Yes, synchronicities.
You know, there's a couple things I want to say. You know, first of all, it is suggested that this matrix that we all question, we all wonder, why is it inverted? Why is it that when a a child of 7 gets shot to death, and the parents have all of the presentation, testimony, they have the proof, they bring it into a court of law, and it's voted down.
Right.
You know, or you wonder why we're going into all of these countries and blowing up women, children, men. Right. Why are we doing all of this? None of it makes sense to us. There is no logic in this. This is because we are in a matrix of someone else's warped mind.
That's right.
This is mind energy that has been inverted and warped.
Right.
It's why they refer to it as the matrix.
Yes.
So that's the first thing. And I think the second thing that you wanted to talk about was compassion.
Yes. Yes. Compassion is everything. On an instantaneous, you know, moment by moment thing, you know, we think about the idea of compassion, you know, and unconditional love. But when it comes down to actually practicing it, you know, and, you know, I don't know about you, but I know in this house that when we were going through this serious purging process over the last year, the guides, they kept throwing circumstances in there to trigger us. And why? Because they wanted you to really come up on what your compassion was all about and what your unconditional love was. And so they knew what triggered us, and they would constantly trigger us so that we would learn to use compassion in those situations that triggered us. Yep. And so that's what's been going on here. And I, you know, as rough as it was to really understand what was going on, you know, I totally get it now. It took me a while to pick up on that, what was really going on with it. And I'm thinking, oh, it's just the dark again, you know, but it's like, well, no, it wasn't the dark. It was my guardians and my guides using a circumstance to trigger us so that we could tailor our response in a more appropriate way, in a compassionate and expressing unconditional love. And when you can do that all the time, no matter what the circumstance is, when now you got it.
We're being groomed right now, Mark. We're being groomed to prepare ourselves to step into a higher dimensionality as well as a higher frequency.
Yes.
And in doing so, I mean, you have to have a certain frequency, folks, to even be able to be brought up aboard a ship.
Yes.
You can talk to so many different people that actually remember going in and out of ships all day long. You have to have a certain frequency to even be able to make it through that process. Yes. This is what ascension's all about, is making sure that all of your cells, every organ, every system, every physicality, every emotional construct, and every thought form, okay, is at a certain high enough frequency to make this leap.
Yes.
So I think one of the things Mark is wanting to do for all of us, if you're already in that state of enlightenment, which my awesome audience is, the one thing that we really need assistance in is having that compassion for all of those that are just coming on board. I mean, I've been receiving a lot of emails from a lot of people that are just stepping into this. Mm-hmm. Quite a few of them come from very strong Christian backgrounds.
Yes.
They're really confused. They're seeking out answers. It's really important for us to be compassionate and try to come from a position of neutrality.
Yes.
I always go back to neutrality.
Yes. Yeah. I think it is a situation where when you speak with folks that have a very strong Christian conviction about them, because that's all that they know, I think it's very important to reassure them that, you know, what they have been taught is good as far as it goes, but it goes a lot deeper and a lot wider. And they don't have to, initially, they don't have to think outside of their box, but they need to dig deeper in the box to really start to get to understand what they're being presented with. And this ties directly in with our quantum universe and the physics that support it, because that's the magic trick about all of it, is we've not been told about the physics. You know, I mean, all the nuclear training and things that I went through, you know, they stopped right at the quantum level because there wasn't a real need to know it. But what, and I'll never forget this, and it always stuck with me, was that one of the instructors says, well, you know, whenever you, even here in the 3D, when you set up an experiment and you observe that experiment, simply by your observation, you change the outcome.
Exactly.
And then you say, well, how does that work? How can that possibly be that me simply observing it changes it? Clearly, the answer is because of the quantum energy field, and your thoughts are in that field.
Right.
When you observe something in the 3D, you are applying an energy to that experiment through your observation, and that will change the outcome. And it will be based upon what your thoughts are. You know, like, because you're basically looking for an outcome. Most times you are looking to prove something. So, and you can't be 100% totally objective about it.
Right.
So you're subjective to it. And so you have a subjective mindset, and that energy pervades that field right in front of you that you're observing, and consequently you changing. So you get exactly what you're looking for. And that same idea has been amplified through the Schumann resonance by about a factor of 4 now. And so whatever we are looking for an outcome, and whether we are really wanting that outcome or not, if we think it, it's going to happen. So whether it's a fear-based thought where you are, oh my God, that storm is coming, or there's going to be an earthquake, or whatever circumstance there is, whatever fear, and fear is a really good one, because that fear, you have so much emotion, plus it's a well-worn track, right? Fear is a well-worn track. So when we project that back to the universe, well, guess what? It comes right back to you. So, and that's where, as you had said, every thought is extremely important, and it has to be a positive thought. It has to be what you want to see, not what someone else wants you to see. So this is taking back our sovereignty, you know, as a supreme human being that is a non-sinning human being.
Yeah, non-sinning human being. I would say, too, that I've had this discussion countless times where, okay, so you've got this group of people, let's say, that are gangbangers, okay? Right. And they, you know, they basically get initiated by taking someone's life. And they're at a specific frequency. Is that going to impact my reality? Well, as a part of the whole, yes. Am I going to have that as my reality on a daily basis? No, because my frequency is much higher.
That's right.
So I'm not going to be pulling that into my frequency bubble,
right,
which is my reality. So I just want people to realize that for those that are coming out of their religious box, which I feel this is one of the main reasons Mark contacted me, is that I do get a lot of these emails. A lot of people are starting to really get challenged with how do I reach my family members?
Yes.
How do I reach my neighbors? How do I reach the guy next door that is starting to ask questions? Because they're starting to ask questions.
They
really are. And they're actually open to listening rather than just saying, nope, sorry. I'm not saying everybody, guys. But quite a few people are starting to open up. This is going to continue to escalate.
Yes.
And what it's going to cause the other side of it, which is us, who've already gone through that in a much more... Let's just say, I feel like the first waivers, we just really blazed the trail.
Yes.
We took the really sledging, thick, difficult path.
Yes.
So we could create that pathway for the others that follow.
Yes.
But for these folks that are stepping out right now, confusion is the number one thing. And right. also just holding a level of compassion.
Yes.
And I wanted to go over this is such a key thing that you brought up, the dispensation of suffering.
Yes.
Now, I feel this is even happening in the spiritual realm, spiritual people, yeah. the spiritual community. We still have this overlay of thinking that we have to suffer.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
No, we don't have to suffer at all. That's the whole point of it, is that if you believe that, if you're a sinner and you're, you know, like these people in Opus Dei that, you know, flog themselves, you know, good Lord, what are they thinking? You know, they have been supremely brainwashed into thinking that, you know, they're just not good enough and that you have to suffer through life. Nah, no, you don't. If that's what you believe, that is exactly what you're going to get. But if you believe in unconditional love, service to others, and all of a sudden, everything starts coming back, and it's extremely positive.
Yeah, and it's coming back quicker.
It comes
so
back.
So if you try something new, you actually get a response and a reaction much more quickly than those of us in the old days.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you get that feedback, like it's manifesting very quickly.
Right, yes. So, yeah, it is that folks have to realize that they can break that pattern of suffrage. You know, that doesn't need to be a part of anyone's life. You know,
so why do we have that belief system in the first place, do you think?
Self-controlling. It's a self-regulating belief system. You know, you tell people they're not worthy, and that's what they believe, so they're always struggling for worthiness. Meanwhile, they never achieve it because they're constantly being told that they're not worthy.
Right.
So they suffer. But the fact is, we are supreme human beings. We are supreme beings in the universe, period. People want to be in this body right now. And the one thing that I didn't say, which is extremely important, is that, you know, and I always have to say this, is that, you know, we are not our bodies. We are not. It's a wonderful thing to have, but that's not who we are. I mean, we are here as part of our own personal spiritual evolution. And oh, by the way, somebody thought that we were good enough to come back to help others.
Yeah.
So pat yourself on the back that you are good enough, because in past lives, you've done things that are extremely good, extremely well. And so you are here to serve that purpose. But meanwhile, again, we go back to the archetype again, that you are an energetic archetype of a certain family. And that family had certain gifts. They were preeminent about those gifts. I'm from a different archetypical family, but I have certain gifts. And so together, collectively, we make these teams to come back, and we are going to remove the dark from the positions of power. We're going to let everyone rise, and the world will be forever changed.
I have a little bit of a addition to that philosophy, and I kind of want to share it, especially because of my alchemy work.
Mm-hmm.
What I find over and over and over again, when I make personalized remedies, for example, and I go in and I look at the themes of what's blocking them, or what are the core issues that are preventing them from getting what they want.
Mm-hmm.
One of the core areas that continues to show itself amongst all of us, I don't care how enlightened you are, by the way.
Right.
And that is, there is this master-slave essence. It's this constant master-slave this, master-slave that. It could be in only one little piece of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in one way that you think. And if you look at that and you peel away the layers of that, there are so many different aspects of you that are all simultaneously living all at the same time.
Yes.
There are all different timelines of you that are living and performing and being at the same time.
Right.
So you're doing all different kinds of things, all different types of places, all different types of events.
Mm-hmm.
And in this reality, and many others, unfortunately, that still exists, there is this master-slave archetype, as well as construct, that we are so used to living in.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the truth. It is only the reality I hope people understand what I mean by that. So when you have something that is chronic, it could even be a physicality. I can almost bet that if you pull away the layers on a spiritual, emotional, mental basis, there will be some issue, some trauma, some hurt, grief, pain, suffering that is associated with that, that has to do with being a master slave participant. It could have been when you were the master.
Right.
And your conscience is hurting because you did that to someone else.
Right.
Or it could be that you were the slave and you were downtrodden and prevented from being able to live in freedom.
Right.
And this is where we have to get to, is really understanding free will for all living beings.
Yes.
All living beings for free will.
Right.
And that goes for animals and plants and crystals and whatever else. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so beautiful about the American Indians, is they really got that. They really honor. It doesn't matter what they do. They, if it's a rock or if it's a crystal or whatever, they pick it up, they talk to it, they honor it, they ask it. They understand that it is still made of the same essence as a human being or anything else. We're all still made of that same essence.
That's right.
And that we honor that and say, is it okay for me to take you home?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it okay for you to sit on my desk with me?
Right. Let me give you a nice home for a while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That master slave, and if you want to take it even a step further, folks, everything in this reality that is corrupted is a virus. I mean, now David Icke did a phenomenal job. You know, I interviewed him. God, that was a 3.5-hour interview about this.
Wow.
And, you know, just has done such a spectacular job on really clarifying that we are in a virus matrix program.
Yes.
Okay. So the master slave essence is also a virus. Because why? Because the master is parasitically putting itself upon the slave.
Right. Yeah, and that's
you know, it's clinging on to it. It's forcing it to be something it doesn't want to be. It's either that or it's taking something away from it.
Right.
It's all parasitic. This is where we're getting down to.
Yes, agreed with that. That's a very interesting concept. I really hadn't heard it expressed that way. It does provide a different perspective in how to look at our government.
Yeah.
Because it is very much a parasite.
Yes.
You know, or its characteristics are parasitical. And so, you know, it almost gives me a different look. You know, how do we, as being the, you know, the recipient of having this parasite attached to us, you know, and it is a very powerful parasite here in the 3D, you know, what do we have to do in order to rid ourselves of that parasite in light of how, you know, just how diverse and how big it is? You know, it is a difficult question, and it certainly has tempered any.
Well, you've touched upon it, because it has to do with frequency.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I do this kind of work all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have proven over and over and over again that every single solitary thing, you know, you can look at your cell phone,
mm-hmm.
okay, or you can look at your post-it notes.
Right.
Okay. Or you can even look at the green tea I'm drinking. Every single thing has its own frequency.
Sure.
And if you're really being downtrodden by, I don't know, an institution, whatever, there's still some string of frequency that you're attached to, where you both are somehow resonating in that particular area of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's parasitic. So if they are attaching themselves to you, then you have to say to yourself, what am I responsible for?
Mm-hmm.
How did I get here?
Right.
How did I allow this parasite to attach to my life, my free will, my whatever?
I think
we've all allowed this. We have been asleep.
Yeah, that's the sin that we were born into.
No, there's another way to look at sin. Seriously.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Sin only means missing the mark.
That's right. Yeah, it's a low frequency, and they are absolutely a low frequency, you know. And I, you know, one thing that that David Wilcox said was that, you know, he's been, you know, subjected to a lot of trauma through his efforts to disclose what is going on. But even the dark has to play by the game.
Rules.
They have to play by the rules.
Yes.
And so, and David said, as long as he, you know, plays by the high road and always has his frequency above, then they really can't do anything about it.
It's very true. And, you know, fear is the virus also.
It is. Yeah. Fear can certainly keep you from acting on things.
But I got to go back to the, I have an interesting story. Dispensation of suffering. I'll never forget this as long as I live. I was over at my sister's house. She's very, very much into the Catholic faith. And she had this priest come over, and they were going to, I don't know what they were going to do, but anyway, and he was very ill and he was dying of cancer. And I looked at him in the eye and I said, you're a man of God, right? And he said, yes, of course. And I said, well, then why do you believe that you have to die just because you have this disease?
Right.
And he said, oh, well, I've done this, this, that, and the other. And I said, but don't you feel that you have the ability to go beyond that? You know, don't you feel that you can work with miracles? Don't you feel that you can work with the natural kingdom that's been given to us to cure and create these sorts of things? And he says, oh no. He says, I understand the benefits and the dispensation of suffering. And I said, really? I said, can you explain that to me? And he says, oh, well, you know, suffering is one of the greatest ways to reach your highest point with God. It's one of the greatest ways that you can connect with
really?
You know, the supreme being. And I said, well, I thought that joy would be one of the greatest ways to connect with your supreme being. And I couldn't talk him out of it. I mean, he was totally convinced that suffering is, without a doubt, one of the most important key things you can do as a good Catholic. Now, this was him. I'm not saying all Catholics are like that, guys.
Yeah.
But it was an eye-opener for me.
Yeah. Well, see, that goes back to Opus Dei, you know, and these guys that flog themselves, you know, that they feel that, you know, what right, wrong, or indifferent, they feel that that's how they aspire to the highest power is through demonstrating that they can suffer. But we know that is
mind control.
It's mind control. And the fact is, you know, if you've got if that superior person that you're doing this for, if they are of the dark, boy, you're feeding right into them.
Sure. Frequently. Yeah. Definitely.
Right. You're feeding right into them. You are giving them exactly what they want. And so they're going
you're feeding the beast.
You are feeding the beast. Absolutely. And so anybody that wants to do that, I would have to stay away from them.
Yeah, that'd be a little over the top.
Yeah, that's a little much there, but yeah.
So what do you feel about forgiveness?
Oh, forgiveness is, forgiveness is so simple. It is easy. You know, once you understand the illusion in the matrix, you know, it doesn't make any difference what anybody has done, because it was all done as a lesson. You know, and it's nothing personal about them. They didn't, chances are people have given you lessons, and they were, you know, not the nice kind of lessons. They may not even realize what they were doing. you know, but you were the recipient. They gave the lesson, you took the lesson, and at the time you're thinking, man, you know, that was totally uncalled for. What were they thinking, you know? But the fact is, it was presented for your benefit. Yeah. And so everyone that is around us, they're constantly giving us lessons. And no matter who, your dog can give you a lesson.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what our guides do. And they arrange these circumstances so that we are able to get these lessons. And so there should never be any question about forgiveness with anything, either in the ancient past or now. Forgiveness is just something that has to happen.
I think
anywhere unless you do forgive. So that's part of that ultimate dispensation from the Lords of Karma. And this is the thing that everyone says that, well, you know, Jesus saves me. Jesus, you know, he died on a cross. And it's like, well, no, that's not the case at all. He didn't die for you. That wasn't it at all. What he showed you an example of what humans can do. Meanwhile, the Lords of Karma, because of the ending of the 26,000 year galactic cycle, has a special dispensation that was written into the Bible to say that if you forgive all of all transgressions, then because we are ending that cycle, that your karmic debt is eliminated. And that's all. It has no.
Second. I have no idea why that happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because what I was talking about, they didn't like that.
That was really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, just so you know, we don't have that much more time. We have about maybe 10 minutes max.
Okay.
And I just wanted to make sure we touch upon everything that you wanted to cover. So did mm-hmm. you want to talk about the new human body?
Oh, sure. Man, this is an incredible thing, you know, and people, you know, this is the problem with our whole circumstance is that, you know, it is absolutely incredible what's going on. And you know, you talk to, like you and I, we can talk about it, and you can see hints of things, you know. I mean, you've got capabilities you didn't have a couple years ago, and you know that.
Yes.
You know that. And it's just like, well, how'd that happen? Well, because you are morphing. You are changing from a 2-strand carbon base to a 12-strand crystalline base. Talking to the average person, they think you're nuts. They think you're nuts, but the fact is, it is happening.
But people's diets are changing.
Yes,
because they can't handle the denser, heavier foods. They
right.
can't handle eating meat because they pick up on the frequency of grief, pain, and suffering from the animal.
Yes. Yes.
You know, they pick up on the fact that if it's maybe they drink too many milk products and it's wreaking havoc on their digestive system.
Right.
This is all part of the body changing.
Yeah.
And also having more lucid dreams, having more intuitions about something, and then it manifests.
It's yes.
all part and parcel to mm-hmm. the new yeah. human body.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things that if, you know, and I was kind of taking this course about these folks. I don't know whether you've heard about it, the superhuman operating system. It's a course.
Uh-uh. And
yeah. Well, one of the key factors in their research in building this course was that in order for you to really step into some of your abilities, you simply have to acknowledge that you have that built-in ability. In other words, if you have, let's say that you're telekinetic, okay, you can move things like chi, you know, using chi to move things. If you don't know that you can do that, then by virtue of the fact that you don't know that, you cannot.
Right.
But in order to allow this gift to come in to manifest for you, you simply acknowledge it. And your brain and your body will start to work to allow your chakras and your energy centers to create the auric fields and the electromagnetic forces that will allow you real telekinetic abilities.
And don't forget, folks, you just need to ask.
Right.
We're in a time frame where we have so much help. But what I hear all the time for guides that want me to share is to keep reminding people to ask.
Right.
Now, there have been, he talks about special dispensations. I am fully aware that there is kind of like this basket of energies and frequencies right above your head right now that you just need to give permission.
Yes.
To receive and have it just rain down upon you and release you from all past karmic debt,
yes,
suffering, sadness, grief, sorrow, and really believe that and put your heart into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, people ask me all the time, Alexander, when you do these planetary missions, do you just like read a script or, you know, do you pray or whatever? No. I mean, there is like a massive amount of energy that goes through me to make this happen. There can't be one little itty bitty doubt when I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right.
Okay. I have to be 100% vested. Third eye, mind, heart, thymus. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
And love.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be 100% there. Like, yeah. Okay.
Right.
Got to really put it in there. You can't just go, you know what? Can I please have some help? Because I really need. No.
Right. Right.
And the other thing I wanted to just touch upon really quickly, Mark, was forgiveness. Okay. I have a little bit of a different way of seeing that because really, as we all know, we do ultimately create our own realities, which means we create our own difficulties.
Right. By and large.
Okay. Sometimes we are targeted. Yeah, I get that. But if you look at some of the difficulties that have happened in your life, really the forgiveness is forgiving yourself for maybe not listening to your discernment, maybe not listening to your guidance.
Right.
Maybe allowing yourself to go back into a destructive situation over and over and over again. That's the forgiveness.
Right.
Ultimately, you're just forgiving yourself.
Right. Right.
When you forgive, really ultimately really, really hard on ourselves.
Right. Right. When you forgive others, then you take the responsibility off of yourself. And so when you forgive yourself, then you give yourself permission to drop that load.
Right.
It's difficult to carry that kind of emotional baggage around with you. It's extremely difficult, and it doesn't serve any purpose at all other than to keep you attached to the 3D realm. And the backing up just a little bit, the reason they cut us off is because they're within the archetype of the family and the Michaels and the Jesus, it is that they arranged for that. It is through them that it was arranged. But the fact is that we have to ask for that. You know, the fact that it exists is because of Jesus and Michael, but it doesn't do any good unless you act on it. And that's what I'm saying is that you have to forgive. You know, you have to ask for forgiveness and you have to give forgiveness. That is the whole point of it. And so while it is the ability for that dispensation is the result of the hierarchy, the heavenly hierarchy, the heavenly spiritual hierarchy. It is us who has to carry forward. It's like, okay, they gave you the cookbook, but you've got to fix, you know, you've got to make the meal out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's why I say that it's not necessarily directly having to do with Jesus. It is part of something that was created that he had something to do with, but we have to carry it out. So I still take exception to that he died for us. He didn't.
You know? Well, and it depends on which timeline you're talking about. It depends on which dimension you're talking about, because in some timelines he didn't get he wasn't killed or murdered or died on the cross at all.
Right. Right.
You know? Yeah. I mean, remember that for every major decision that we make in our life, whether we're going to get married or not, whether we're going to have a child
Not,
that creates another timeline in our lives.
Yes, yeah.
Why do you think that we're where we are today? Many of us as light workers, we're doing an immense amount of work on timelines.
Right.
So that we can remove these negative timelines that have impacted entire human consciousness.
Correct.
You know, that's correct. What we're doing. And this is why we're up at night. This is why we're staying awake at night, so we can keep anchoring the right. positive timelines that we've worked so hard to implement.
Right, right.
We yeah. are creating our heaven on earth.
Yes. Well, we are that bridge. We are that bridge to bring heaven to earth. And that's an important aspect. And forgiveness is certainly part and parcel to that.
Our heaven is also within us.
That is correct.
Heaven
that
on is. Earth is what's within us.
Right, right.
I mean, yes. We are just a microcosm of a macrocosm. So yes. I want people to not forget that. Mm-hmm. But, well, Mark, if anybody wants to write you, and I'm just absolutely thrilled to get hooked up to your pictures of the moon.
Yes, yes.
Where would they contact you? Go ahead and give them that information.
Let's do
Facebook.
Actually, I've got a Gmail account that I can give you, and it's 3AK. It's 3AlphaKing8510@gmail.com.
So 3AK 85@gmail.com.
8510.
8510.
Yeah, it's my license plate number.
Oh my God, are you insane?
Yeah. Yeah. So
Mister, I'm so concerned about the government monitoring me.
Oh, I'm not. I don't care about the government. I just don't know how much I want to engage them.
You're crazy, Gus. Okay, guys.
So three. Yeah.
Anyway, you can also find them on Facebook. And Mark is going to provide me some cool photos. I will include them with the YouTube link as well, so you guys can access those.
Perfect.
So anyway, thanks a lot, Mark, and hopefully this helps some of you that have been writing in as far as how you can have a couple of different lenses and ways to reach family and friends that are not maybe in the same place as you are in your spiritual perspective, and just looking towards the future of our new reality. And remember, our responsibility now at this time is not necessarily to be a bridge. Our responsibility now is to be the 5D. So I want to send everybody lots of love. Once again, thank you for all of your support, your prayers, your protection, just your love. I mean, it really keeps me going. And I just, from my heart to yours, thank you so much for all you guys do for me. So we'll talk to you guys soon. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll see you next week. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Talk soon. Bye.